I'm surprised Carlisle didn't have your photo at the front of the arena there. So you,
folks, I was thinking about that Knicks thing about the facial recognition when I got in. I thought some alarm was going to come off. It was the first time I got in, and it was an interesting experience.
Welcome to Rogue Bogues, another episode of the basketball series. Myself, Andrew Bogut, pro, live from Dallas, and a shout out to Trent every now and then tuning in. This is our Easter Sunday, pro. This is what we do for you.
That's great, Bogues, because, you know, I came a day earlier, which that's what I'm doing for you guys. So
I'll give you Easter Sunday off. That's why I eat all those eggs. Vegan eggs.
Like you two pricks are going to really do something for my benefit. I appreciate that.
Always.
But yeah. But the two things I want to lead off with is A, our boy Landale, or should I call him my new name, Shaquille Landale. And the second thing, my apologies, deepest apologies to Zion Williamson, who's actually finally losing weight and killing it. Because we've been so hard. I've been really harsh on the kid, and he's been playing great. So those are the two things I want to get off my chest going into the show.
Yes, we have those both on the run sheet, so we'll get to those shortly. A lot to get through today. Obviously, college basketball going on right now. NBA's 8 or 9 games left in the season, so seeding starting to really matter. NBL Finals, Game 5. So we'll talk about all that shortly. And let's get rolling with our team of the week. I'm interested to see who you have this week, bro. Who's your team?
I'm going to go with the Dallas Mavericks as my team of the week. Bogues, these guys are really dangerous. They've been knocking off teams. Look, I could have went with Houston. Look, they've won a bunch of games in a row. I think 11 maybe. And they've been great. But Dallas, what they've been doing, Bogues, I mean, since the trade for Gafford, getting off of Williams, they're next level good as far as a team that was probably borderline mid playing type to a team that could challenge for the West. I mean, I don't know if there would be Denver, but like what they've been doing with the Gafford, with the Luka Doncic Gafford, you know, rolls to the rim, the way they've been defending, more just like moving the ball. I mean, they've been playing really well. I mean, they had one of the worst defenses in the league, you know, coming into the, you know, after the trading deadline. They've done really well. And just from what I've been seeing them as a team, I'm really impressed. I think they could really challenge, because if you think about it, if you really look at the matchups in the West, the way they've been playing, besides Denver, there's really not a team, maybe the Clippers if they're healthy, but the Clippers haven't been great in the last couple of weeks either. They're a tough team, Bogues. They're going to be a tough out going forward.
Yeah, I had them as well. I agree with you in Houston. Shout out to them. 11 straight. They're playing really good basketball right now. Kind of a softer schedule starts to get a little bit tighter for them, but Dallas have been balling. They're 9-1 in their last 10. And I picked them in my top six, I believe, in the preseason based on they've got two guys that are all-league closers, right? Like Kyrie's great in the clutch. Luka's great in the clutch. They make tough shots. They've had numerous games over the last month where that game where Luka hit the big three and then Kyrie hit the left-handed runner that we spoke about. They have closers, man, and you need those in the playoffs, and I agree with you in the playoffs. I think that, you know, the 1 and 2 seeds have had really good seasons, but, you know, they face a Dallas Mavericks potentially in the first round if they do fall 4 to 7, which they shouldn't, but they'll probably get them in the second round. You know, not a team you want to face. They've got a lot of good pieces. They made some great trades at the deadline, got off Williams. I think Washington's been a good acquisition for them as well. Gafford, like you said, you know, they're still not setting the world on fire defensively. They're 20th in the league in opposing points per game from opposing teams, 19th in assists. They don't move the ball that well, but that's because they have two ISO guys that can just completely change the way they play. I like to see them rebound a little better though, 21st in rebounding. So they need to then get those numbers towards the end of this season a little bit, you know, 15, 16, they'll be okay, but they're 16 points per game. And it brings me to a point about, you know, the talk around Luka Doncic and MVP. You know, you haven't heard it as much as you probably should. You know, there's still the usual suspects in Jokic, and Giannis is up there. I think SGA deservedly up there, but Luka, man, I mean, 33.8, 9.1 rebounds and 9.8 assists a night. And if they continue to surge, I mean, he's going to be up there. I think it's probably, you know, Jokic, you can never count out, but SGA versus Luka, in my opinion, and I think they're both, you know, SGA's had one of those seasons where they're a 1-2 seed. You saw a similar thing with Steph when he won his first one, was that surge of the Warriors coming up to, you know, being a mid-tier team to first, and then bang, he was the MVP. That could be SGA, but Luka's definitely in the mix, having a hell of a season.
Bogues, I had them 10th coming into the season, and for Luka, I had him at 1. I think Luka's an unbelievable talent. Obviously, he hasn't had the playoff success that Jokic has had to really bring him forward, but for what he does and how he impacts the game, first of all, just like Jokic, I mean, they're probably 1 and 2 in the league in passing as far as vision and being able to make plays for other people. Yeah, he holds the ball a lot. He isolates, no question about it. But as far as that team having, like, there's a lot of negativity towards Kyrie Irving, and a lot of it's justified. A lot of the things that he does and, you know, off the court stuff, as far as like some of the things he says and how he does it. Now, when he's not bored and he's sort of focused on the basketball end and doesn't get into the other stuff and actually plays games, he's a juggernaut. And putting those two guys that can not only close games, can score in any situation, can make plays, and both those guys are two of the top finishers that I've ever seen as far as when they get into the basket. And they're just a tough out. They're not perfect, don't get me wrong. I don't know how long this run's going to be, but those two guys are juggernauts. And like you said, yeah, not a lot of Jokic talk. I mean, not a lot of Doncic talk for MVP, but I mean, if you watch what he does, and his shooting's improved, his three-point shooting's improved, you know, his conditioning has been pretty good. His free throw shooting's almost 5% better from last year. His three-point shooting's better. I mean, those 30-point triple-double run that he's made has been pretty special. And look, they've elevated their play. I think the trade had a lot to do with it, getting Williams out and the Gafford deal we talked about. But yeah, they're a fun team to watch, and they're you could tell they're together, and they play well together. And you know, like I said, it's good because all we've been hearing all year, you know, is Denver Clippers, and then the two teams, Oklahoma City, Minnesota. It's good to have another team in the mix that could challenge those guys a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, excited to see how they go in the playoffs. Very, very well-built team. Just be interesting to see if they have enough defense and rebounding for mine to get deep into a conference final / a finals. But they definitely have the scoring. They have the closers. So interested to see that. All right, my weak team of the period, I'm going to go with the Milwaukee Bucks. You know, there's the usual suspects, and usually we go with teams once they hit the double-digit loss column. Toronto Raptors, shout-out to you, honorable mention. But they're clearly in a tanking mode. They've got a bunch of injuries. They're resting guys. They've lost 12 straight, so they can definitely be in contention. But, yeah, the Milwaukee Bucks, just consistency for me. They just can't seem to put together a nice little run here. I mean, they went from, circle back to March 6th, lost to Golden State, lost to Lakers. Then they go and beat the Clippers. So you're like, okay, things are turning the corner. Then they drop one a sack. Then they beat Philly and Phoenix, two good, decent wins. Okay, Philly are so-so, but Phoenix, decent team. Lose to Boston, beat Brooklyn and OKC, and they lose to the Lakers and New Orleans. You know, they just can't. Battling Atlanta right now, they're up by 10 in the third. But just consistency, it just still doesn't look right. Look, they've had some injuries. They've had guys in and out of lineups. Giannis has rested a few nights. Dame's still trying to find his shooting touch. That they've had some inconsistencies there. But it just does not seem like a team at this point of the season. You need to at least start putting some. You know, you lose a game to a buzzer beater, or someone drops 50, like, you know, shit happens in the NBA, right? But the way they've lost some of those games, just, you know, a few of those games, no life, getting blown out, you know, to teams that they probably should be competing with, is not a great sign going into the playoffs. And they're sitting at 2 right now, Pro. Who do you think is going to be that 7 or 8 seed? The 7's probably going to be Miami. And that's what everyone's looking at is like, you know, Miami's full game behind Indiana for the 6. If Miami's staying that 7, Milwaukee might lose 4 in a row at the end of the season to try and get out of that 2 to get to 3, because they do not match up well with the Miami Heat historically, of course, last season, but just in general, they do a really good job with Giannis. So I'm interested to see what if they play any shenanigans trying to get out of that 2 seed.
Bogues, I'll tell you what, like Indiana has had their number two.
You're right.
So they're tough. I mean, it's not going to be easy for them. Look, I've been saying it all year. I've been saying it probably for 2 years. I think that the free throw shooting of Giannis is going to be a big problem down the stretch in playoff games. Look, you know, in the regular season, you have a lot of blowouts. If he goes 2 for 8 from the free throw line on some nights, it doesn't really affect them. But you know how this playoff stuff happens. Most games are close. You know, they're going to single that out in clutch time, especially when they start counting his free throws and things like that. I think that that's a huge problem. It hasn't been addressed. He hasn't really been a consistent free throw shooter for a few years now. And like the other night when they lost that, I think they lost. I forgot who they lost to. Was it the Lakers, who he went like 1 for 6 or 2 for 6 in the free throw line? 1 for 6, I believe. So, I mean, I believe that's going to be a big problem. You know, you can't be a closing franchise type player, MVP player, that if you can't make free throws down the stretch, because, you know, you're going to cost your team wins. And look, everything he does is good, but he needs to be able to get that free throw down, or it's going to be a big problem, especially as he gets out of the first round going forward. If he even does that, Miami's going to be tough. Indiana's going to be tough. You know, I think that they're going to face a pretty tough first round matchup, like you said, unless they try to get themselves out of it. You know, if they want to do that, if they want to play those numbers games.
They got to absolutely tank to get to 4 if they want to do that. But that's suicide at that point.
Now,
Giannis is at 65%, so not Hack-a-Shaq realm. 64 last season. The season they won it, he was 72. So, but yeah, it's a confidence thing. You know, when he makes his first couple, he seems to be better. But yeah, you're right. If it's a tight playoff game, they're going to wrap him up a lot and just bank on him going 1 for 2 and then trying to come back and hit a 3 or a 2.
It's weird, Bo. He'll have games, though, where he goes 9 for 10.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen a lot. Don't get me wrong.
We saw it in the NBA Finals against Phoenix. I mean, he had the 17 for 19 night, wasn't it? Or 18 for 20 or something like that.
Just, something like that.
Yeah, and I won him the game. So I won him the series, really. So I still think that, you know, he's still obviously an all-league player, but that's probably the one thing. And then Dame shooting in general just hasn't been great. You know, he's I don't know what his splits are at right now. Let's have a look. But he, you know, he had that horrendous start from the new year, which were just not great. But, you know, they do have a bit of shooting woes. They are a pretty high-tempo team just because they want Giannis to really push the ball. You look at Dame's splits right now, he's at 42% from the field, 35% from 3. So he's somewhat improved there. But, you know, they still have work to do. I'm just not sold on them. And teams, they're just clunky heading into playoffs to me. You got to get some sort of trajectory, some sort of rhythm, some sort of flow, feeling good about yourself, having your squad healthy, and you've played 10, 15 good games to have a decent playoff series. So maybe they'll prove us wrong, but I'm not a fan. Who was your team this week?
Milwaukee. Yeah, Milwaukee the same.
Yep. Yeah. Mm. So, all right, moving on. There's a lot of news going on, but the one bit of news probably that was massive news over the last couple of weeks was Dante Porter with the Raptors, brother of Michael Porter Jr., under investigation by the NBA for irregular betting or prop betting involving him. Basically, I don't know what platform it was on, but they reported that the biggest action for a night was on him. And look, he's a role player that plays limited minutes. You know, some nights plays 4 or 5 minutes, some nights plays 18 minutes. I think there were a bunch of props for his unders one night. He was recovering from an eye injury the night where there was the most action seen. The player with the most action seen on that night was him. He leaves the game within 3 or 4 minutes with a re-aggravated eye injury. Obviously, there's some smoke there, but I just want to say, I think, you know, as a podcast, it was sponsored by a sports betting agency. Sports betting's everywhere in Australia, everywhere now in the US, becoming more and more prominent. I'm not one of those guys. It's like, it should be banned, because I believe that everyone should have some sort of discipline to stop themselves doing that. I don't think that you should ban things just because there's people that are struggling with it. It's the same as buying alcohol, cigarettes, all that kind of thing. Everything's in moderation. So I just want to say that. But I don't think this is a one-off. I think this is happening more than we would know. College basketball, international basketball, NBA basketball, not just basketball, sports in general. The fact that you've got all these parlays You've got all these different betting platforms that you can go on. You have to remember the NBA players have an inner circle. All pro athletes have an inner circle. So you've got Joe Blow, your cousin that you've known since you were 12 years old. It's probably on your payroll for $100K a year. He's getting access to information that can change and swing bets. So, you know, I come home, I'm playing for the Warriors. I come home, oh shit, Steph's bangs up today at practice. He's not going to play tonight. Hasn't been announced. You know, Joe Blow, the cousin, goes and puts the money on it. This is happening more than, this would happen a shitload. Problem was that this happened, that obviously there was a lot more betting that triggered these betting agencies. But I think it is, it's a question of how do you fix it? What do you do? It's hard. You talk about NBA contracts being so high. This is a big part of it. Sports betting is involved now. So contracts have gone up. So that's the positive of it. The negative is now players complaining about saying, all I hear in the crowd is, you know, hey, Bogut, I need +8 rebounds for you tonight for my parlay. And it's just like, I used to laugh at dudes that would, you know, sit behind the bench in the road games and say, come on, Bogut, I got you on your fantasy. I got you on my fantasy team, man. I need more from you tonight, blah, blah, blah. And I'll turn around and be like, fuck your fantasy team. I live in reality. Like, I couldn't give a shit about your fantasy team.
Yeah, Bogues, that was probably me. And you're right, you didn't. So you needed to give me more. So don't worry about
late
it.
Late in my career. Early, I was a good buyer earlier. Late in my career, yeah. Not too good. But yeah, to the point that it's happening a lot now, that even the NBA is working with FanDuel and DraftKings to integrate live betting into the NBA app. So no longer do you have to swipe out of the NBA app checking the stats. You can just do it straight. You don't have to log into the sports betting app. You can do it direct from there. So it's a huge issue. I think it's happening more than we'd know. Look, are players doing it at mass? No. But, you know, let's say you're a non-guaranteed camp guy, right? You're a non-guaranteed camp guy, or you're a vet min guy, or right, non-guaranteed camp guy. You make a roster. You're there for at least the first month, you know, till there's a waive period or whatever. You might get waived by January. And you're making after, you know, let's say $500,000 after taxes, a couple of hundred grand. And someone's offered you, hey, you got any, go under this parlay, I'll give you $200,000. You know, it's hard. People are going to be like, I might not even be in the league in a month's time. I might be in Europe or China. Like, why not? I'll make some cash. You got vet min guys, pro, that are, you know, we all know how silly athletes can be with their money towards the end of their tether, year 12, 13, 14. They're on the vet min, making a few million a year. Yes, it is a lot of money for some people, but these guys probably have a mansion in Miami and LA and funding different lifestyles. So they're making about a mil after tax. Someone offers them, you know, I'll give you over the course of the season a couple of $1 million to tip me off on 4 or 5 parlays. Do you think guys are not doing that? Now, I don't think it's en masse, but I think it's happening. And I think it's you know, you've kind of let the devil in the room with you. And then finally, you know, with this news, a Minnesota employee was just fired and charged with third degree burglary for stealing thousands of files that included NBA strategic info. That's the other side, pro. You got these whole analytics departments, low level employees, 80, 100 grand a year. They've got access to some information that can completely swing betting, right? So you factor all that in, man. You're like, There is some smoke to this fire. And I think the fact that this one got released, all betting agencies and betting platforms have algorithms that trigger that, you know, if we usually get this much betting on this role player, that's fine. As soon as it goes heavily above, they know something's up, and they have algorithms to give them an alert or an alarm to say, hey, someone's got inside information, blah, 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 blah. So I don't know what your thoughts are on it, pro. I don't think you turn the tap off. I don't think you should make it illegal. But it's just something that I'm not sure how the NBA fixes at this point.
The more I'm worried about, Bogues, like, we talked about this right from the start. And the prop bet things, I've been really worried about that part of it, you know, from the inception. Just because of that. Just because any player could be like, you know what? My plus minus is, say, like 14 tonight or 18 points. Your boy's like, hey, look, put whatever on it. I'm just going to pass a lot tonight. So go ahead and do your thing. So yeah, there is some danger in that. I don't think it's rampant, but I do think it happens a lot more than one would think. The way it happened was his 3-point shots plus minus, right?
Over under and point. I think it was points and three point makes was 0.5. So one, he needed to make one to be the over, but he checked out of the game within 4 minutes.
Right. So my thing is, look, there aren't many people who watches more film than I do. And there's a lot of moron players that would take bad shots or don't shoot when they should shoot. So instead of checking yourself out of a game, why not just pass the ball around and just like make it look good, right? Mm. But that's neither here nor there. I worry about the health of the players or a coach, you know, JB Bickerstaff, or, you know, getting threats to him and his family about certain things. You know, it starts in joking, like, hey, you know, I need 11 rebounds for you tonight. Like, some guys are just joking. Some guys
you're
aren't.
Cool to their mortgage. Are,
yeah, some guys are going to get their legs broken if that doesn't pay off on Monday. Their legs are broken by Thursday when it's collection day. So now a lot more of these guys aren't going through bookies anymore. They're going through, you know, regular, you know, platforms. I do think with the prop betting, if I were the league, and the league's always good with, you know, trying to investigate things and try to change them and tweak them to where it works better. I do think that the prop betting should only be a certain amount of players, should only be some of the better players. So, like, I'm not saying they're above not cheating or anything like that, but I think like LeBron James or Luka or whatever, like if you're betting on their plus minus, they're a lot, you know, obviously.
Yeah, they're making $50 million a year. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they're not really worried about that. Mm. Like, they're just going to do what they do. And they know, most of these guys are smart enough to know, like you said, that all this stuff is tracked. So if like, you know, if it comes up that, I don't know, if it comes up that JJ Barea is, you know, usually doesn't get any money bet on him, and there's like $3 million bet on his minus or his plus on a certain stat, that they're going to red flag it, you know, or a player like that, Gary Trent Jr. or, you know, Chris Boucher or something. But
a lot of betting agencies probably will cap random bets anyway. So that this is my issue with sports betting is like, they ban people that are good at sports betting. So if you're a lifetime winner and you're classified as a professional gambler, you can't even gamble on most platforms. They're going to ban you instantly, right? Which is not right, because then you're allowing people that are just blatantly throwing money and losing money, but you won't allow people that are good. But I think it definitely is an issue that you know you can't get around. And I think the sports betting side of things, It does change things. Like you said, I used to get it. I made a turnover late in a game at Brooklyn. I still remember it. I think we were down one or two, made a turnover, tried to throw it to Steph and kind of overthrew it, went out of bounds. I was getting death threats on social media after that game because people had bets on whatever it was, the parlay or the multi or whatever. It sucks, but I'm not for banning it, but it's just one of those things. I like that idea, though. I think role players and low level players
shouldn't be allowed
to parlay on them, because I think it's ripe for that. College, you know, even you look at college, you know, there's a lot of kids that could, and it's been done since the test of time. You know, 80s, 70s, 80s point shaving and all that. Now you can do it in a unique way. Like, the easiest one to me is assists, because you can throw pass. Yeah, well, if you've got a plus minus of 10 assists a game, right? Mm. All right, I'm going to go the under, and then that player's in on it. All you do is you hold the ball for an extra second, and then as you swing it, you make sure it gets there while the defense has enough time to recover. Just like, oh, sorry, missed you. How are you going to prove that? You know, how are you going to prove steals? Like, parlay on steals or parlay on block shots? I could easily get an under on parlay with block shots. I'll just keep verticality. My coach told me I got a verticality. Stop trying to reach at shots. So there's millions of ways to do this shit. Is it rampant? No. Is there probably, you know, 5%, 10%, which then not directly the player, but goes along with family, cousins, friends that are getting information? For sure. I have no doubt in my mind there is.
I mean, information is key. Like, how do you know, like, how do you think these guys that are breaking stories all the time, like, get it? They got people, 5, 10, 15 people that are feeding them information from every franchise. So, like, information is key, and you don't even think about it. Like, you could be in a staff meeting, and, you know, it could be an analytics meeting, it could be a coach's meeting, and it could be the intern, you know, and these betting guys, what do you think? Like, these big, you know, betting people and people that get information, they pay those guys under the table or whatever, or they get them some type of favor to give them that information. And look, I think, you know, everything's BRI. Like, all this money goes into the pot. These guys are making bigger contracts because of it. So progress is never free. Yeah, you're making all this extra money because of gambling, you know, because of the gambling platforms and things. But obviously, there's some issues about, there's going to be some security issues. There's going to be leaking information. There's going to be players getting trust me, it's going to happen. Somebody's going to follow somebody home and there's going to be an altercation because of a bet gone bad. There's going to be some of that, but that's, look, that's what you get, you know, from this. And it, I don't blame the league. Look, this is a big revenue, you know, share for them. But they got to figure a way, maybe how to tweak this a little bit to make it a little bit safer. But you're right. Like, they go home and they talk to their boys at home. They talk to their agent. They talk to their runner. They talk to somebody who's going to get their, you know, get to the information. It's funny. When I was in Vegas, I have a friend of mine that was in the NBA a long time that was connected to the sports books and, you know, knew people that were connected. And he told me that, like, a lot of these sports books, they have the basketball, like, for, but just say for the basketball part of it, they'll have a guy that like knows the game inside and out. They have the information guy. That's a second separate guy that knows all the inner deals. You know, who's fighting with who, who's got an injury that no one knows about, all the inside dope. And then the third guy is the analytics guy. And they don't know who each other, you know, they don't know each other. They never talk to each other. And then they communicate with the sports book, and that's sort of how they come up with their number and their figure. I mean, there's so much that goes into the sports betting side. You know, there's so much money and there's so much information. There's so much manpower with this. But I think they just got to tweak it and figure things out. I agree with you.
I mean, there's no way, like, this is I think it's a water, it's a tap, it's a faucet. Like, you turn it on, yeah. You can't tweak it. Like, it's, you're either allowing it or you're not. And I'm not for banning it. Like I said, I'm for people exercising free will and doing what they enjoy. And I don't think a few people that struggle with gambling addiction or whatever should ruin it for other people. But It is interesting, and you know, these, I know a few actual professional sports bettors, and just from the poker scene and whatnot. And what's funny is these betting agencies will ban professionals, right? So what these professional bettors now are doing is they look for whales. They look for people that have lost a shitload of money. So say I'm Joe Blow, I've lost hundreds and thousands of dollars on a certain app. These pro sports bettors, the whales reach out to them and say, I'm going to give you access to my account. Just get me even. And then the sports bettor takes a cut. That's how they do it now. So it doesn't look, you know, because if these sports bettors start a small account, you're usually capped. So your bets can only be $10, $20 a pop. Too late to get to know you and you've lost enough. They actually find the biggest losers and they'll get them back to zero. So I found that really interesting too. But it's a dark industry. And to think that, you know, there's not mafia-esque type tactics like you just said, that have got to friends of players or cousins of players or even players at times or coaches or front office staff or whoever, cheerleaders, I don't know. But there's people that have been got to that will be making a clip. And then one, as we know, like the movies say, once you're in bed with nefarious people, you're not getting out. It's not as simple as, I'll make my quick $500,000 and then I'm done. No. Once we've got you in, you're in. There's no getting out. We've got you by the balls, right? Yeah. So it is interesting, and I just don't think it's something they can turn off, but they're going to have to. We used to have, I'm sure you sat in the sports betting seminar protocol the NBA does once a year, where they sit you down as a team and say, hey, you can't bet on games. Hey, if you've got a cousin that's really asking some pointed questions about, I saw Steph was limping last game. Is he going to play tonight? And you wouldn't even think of this shit as a normal kid, 19, 20-year-old coming from college, that your uncle asks you, I'm a big Steph fan, I might want to come to the game tonight. Is he playing? And you're like, nah, he's out for two games. And then he's going to bet. You can technically get in trouble for that, because the NBA can say, you should have known better. Just basic conversation. It could be your dad. It could be your uncle. So they really try to educate the NBA players, for those that aren't on the phones on their phones in that meeting paying attention. But it is interesting. And I think something's going to happen eventually.
But also, Bogues, I think that the NBA needs to make the games more exciting, because if you look at it, if you go to the games and you look around, I would say 30% of people aren't barely even watching the game. They're on their phone, right? So now you add the sports betting. They need it. I think they need it for people to be more engaged to the game.
Especially, you know, game 55, you know, Memphis versus Indiana, you know, it's just like
– yeah.
You're not going to that game.
I think it just makes the game funner. It would get more enjoyable for the average fan that like, you know, the 25-year-olds that go to the game, they just want to get fucked up by drinking 5 or 6 beers for $300. And then they go, you know, and then they go like bet on, you know, they bet on whatever. They bet on Grady Dick scoring 11 points in a game or something like that. So it's like, you know, where do you go from there? But I think that, look, I'm with you. You can't shut it off. It is what it is. You just got to figure, you know, look, it preys on the weak. Most people on the planet are weak people. And that's why all these betting agencies and sports books make tons of money and they barely ever lose. Because usually some fucking moron is going to bet with their heart. They don't know what they're doing and they're going to get in a lot of trouble. But, you know, it's funny to me that, like, you listen to the ads, right? And it's like down your throat that you need to gamble, you need to gamble, you need to gamble. And then for 7 seconds, they'll run off. Well, if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800, you know, get help. Da, da, da. I think it's fucking hilarious because it's so fucking hypocritical. But that's where we are, it's bro.
Government regulation. But, you know, advice for people that are betting or betting, have a separate account, have a limit that's per month or per week or whatever it is. And then once you hit that limit, I think where people get in trouble is they, you know, if you're going into mortgage payments or child support payments or stuff that's for your family, that's when you get in some big trouble. So try to, like everything, it's moderation, you know, it's the test of time. You got to be a moderate with everything. If you go too hard on anything, you'll cause yourself some problems. All right, moving on from that, G League Ignite officially gone, put a line through them pro. They're gone after this season. Not sure why, but probably just not working out for them. Pointless, I guess. Great for the NBL. Great for college again, once again. I wonder if there's a little nil kickback coming to the NBA Pro to get rid of the Ignite program. But, they've moved that on. It wasn't basketball that was appealing to the eye watching the G League Ignite. I know the NBL has potentially flagged doing something similar. I still hope they don't do anything of the such of trying to bring in kind of a next star team. I think that would be absolute suicide for the league. That's gone. I think it's good for the NBL, and that's why kind of the news caught my eye. But what are your thoughts on it, Pro?
I think that the Ignite team did a good job with – and look, I think if you look at it from the outside and you see their record, you'd be like, yeah, wow, they're terrible, what have you. But – the age of the players, I think that having so, like, they had like 11 or 12 players drafted and a lot of top level picks and a lot of good players. And look, they got just as much development or a little bit more than they would at the average college team. The average college team usually has a head coach, it's a narcissist, and they'll have 3 or 4 assistants that just recruit. None of them, you know, they couldn't turn Larry Bird into a guy who could score 10 points a game, most of those college coaches, assistants. So it's like, yeah, I think the G League Ignite did a decent job with developing the players. But the problem is when you play in a G League schedule, even if you got really good players, they're 19 years old versus, you know, even though the players are a little bit young, but a lot of those guys are pro players, you know, 3, 4, 5 years in their pro career in the G League. It's really tough to compete even if you have really good players. But look, I thought it was a decent – I think it's a good thing that they did as far as giving players like high-level players another option. In my opinion, they probably should have limited it to 2 or 3 and then really got them. I mean, they tried to do this, but a lot of times they'll have 4 or 5 of those guys on the same team, and they got to play minutes. They got to showcase themselves because they want to continue to get players. I just think it's a tough model. I don't mind the college game. I don't mind if they go to the NBL. I don't mind if they go to other places to develop. I thought it was okay. But I don't care, like in development, I don't really care about the record. But I think a lot of these stories that really put a hole in them, that it was like their record, they're terrible. I don't expect guys like that to win even at the G League level yet. But I do believe them because, you know, those guys in development, they've had some decent coaches there. But it'll be interesting going forward. Like you said, NBL is going to have a lot more options. And college will have a lot more options, especially with these NIL deals that these players are signing. So, and plus it's a lot of money. You get 4 or 5 guys making anywhere from like 400 grand to a million on the same roster. It's a little bit tough to, you know, financially, especially when they're trying to negotiate a new TV deal. I'm sure they probably want to cut some costs and things, but, I'd be interested because the NBA is definitely going to come up with something. They're going to come up with an academy, you know, Adam Silver talking at the All-Star break about that stuff. So it'll be interesting what they come up with. The NBA is always thinking about something. They have these NBA academies all over the world. I wouldn't be surprised if they try to do a mega academy to try to get, you know, hiring a lot of development people and just having it its own thing. But I don't know. We'll see going forward.
Yeah, you just don't often see programs with the NBA going under or being terminated. It's just rare.
Yeah.
They usually morph into something else or tweak. So maybe you're right, but we'll see. Ice Cube has offered Caitlin Clark $5 million to play in the Big 3 Pro. How do you honestly think she would go in the big three?
I think it'll be entertaining.
How would she go with, how would she go boxing out Reggie Evans, for example?
Hey, it wouldn't be great. It would be entertaining, but it wouldn't be.
That's a physical league, man. Like the big three, the big three is more physical than the NBA. They get into it. That is as close to street ball as you can get in an organized structure.
She could compete that. You'll give it to her at half court. She'll fucking jack up a shot. Like, you know, it'll be a disaster, but it'll be great for that league. Now, I did hear from somebody that's connected to the league that $5 million offer isn't really legit. I heard the league's not doing great. Maybe Ice Cube just said, hey, I'm just going to give it to it and see what happens. But I heard that wasn't 100% legit on the $5 million, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe my people are wrong. But
marketing, you get your money back just on marketing and people wanting to watch for the first couple of games at least, where people, you'd have camera crews from all over the US. You'd have people, you know, that love women's sports, men's sports, whatever, coming to see how it goes. But then I think after a couple of weeks of it, you'd be like, okay.
She couldn't. Even with those players that are like long gone, you can't compete physically with that. And especially in a half court situation, you would think maybe in full court she could beat some people up. There's no way.
That's what I thought. I've watched a few of those games before. I know Barbosa played in them. A few of my former teammates have played in them. And like I saw Reggie Evans, and I can't remember who he was battling. Just WW, like it was wrestling. It was just throwing guys into the basket stands. Like it was just, and the refs are just like, yeah, get up. Like there's no, they're not trying to give you free throws like the NBA or the NBL where you hear a tweak, a whistle every possession down. It's intense. There's shit talking. There's been punches thrown in those games. So I don't think that would do too well. Good marketing, but other than that, not too much. Some housekeeping, just some injuries. Probably there's been a lot going on. Embiid close to return. He's practicing again, reportedly. So don't know what that means. Practicing can be used very loosely. Does that mean non-contact? Does that mean 5-on-0? Does it mean 3-on-3? Does it mean actual full practices? I would still say he's probably a couple of weeks off if he just started practicing. So hopefully we see him back because Philly really have zero chance without him. Christian Wood and Jared Vanderbilt out for the season. Could potentially be back for the playoffs. So that hurts them a little bit with just some depth. Pistons rookie Thompson.
Yeah, Osa Thompson.
Osa Thompson missed the remainder of the season with blood clots, so hopefully he gets healthy. Kevin Huerter out for the will need season-ending surgery, torn labrum. That's a huge out for them. They haven't been playing great, but still in the mix there, trying to capitalize on their last season, playing pretty well last season, bringing that into this year. They've been pretty inconsistent, but that's a huge, huge out. A lot of scoring gone there. Pat Bev will continue to play this season despite needing surgery on a torn ligament in his right hand. So he's gone from there. And by the way, did you see the backlash he got for naming the whitest black players?
Yeah, I saw that.
Like, what are you thinking, dude? Like it was quite funny. And seeing the pushback from your guy Mo Bamba actually clapped back pretty well because he grew up in it.
He did.
A pretty rough area, I believe, in New York. Was it Brooklyn or Harlem or somewhere down that way? He clapped back pretty well, but pretty silly thing for him to do. Anyway, college, what do you got for us? You went to some college games last night. What are you seeing?
A friend of mine's daughter works for Duke basketball, so we got some tickets and came to Dallas. So I haven't really been in tune to the college game, you know, for a while. So he said, hey, you want to come? So, you know, paid my $40 to park and $80 in food. And, you know, I got like one taco and one nacho for like $80. And so, no, it was cool though. It was a good experience. It was in middle of Duke, you know, Duke heaven. Like if you're a Duke fan, forget about it. Like, you know, saw a bunch of players, ex-players, David Robinson's son plays for Duke. Saw Kyle Singler, a couple of guys I haven't seen in a while, but anyway, it was a good atmosphere. So you got NC State, which their coach was going to get fired at the end of the season. His agent should get agent of the year. I don't care who your agent is. This guy's agent of the year. So this guy was about to get fired. They were just looking for a reason. He wins the ACC tournament. He's got a clause in his contract where if you win the ACC tournament, he automatically gets like 2 years added to his contract. Not only does he win the ACC tournament, gets his 2 years. Now he's making a run in the tournament where he's now in the Elite Eight. Gonna play Duke for the right to go to the Final Four. And this guy's about to get fired. team was not very good, now could go to the Final Four. And saw Duke. Duke had a couple of players that will be in the NBA draft still in the next year or two. So it was pretty interesting to watch. Not one of their better teams, but they got a couple of decent players to watch. I might go to the game tomorrow, but it's interesting because I haven't been in there since I got fired from the Mavs. I haven't been in that arena since. So it was pretty cool to – I've never sat there, never sat in the arena myself. So it was pretty – at any type of an event. So it was pretty cool to watch that stuff, man. It's that college basketball, though, dude, they make a lot of money, folks. A lot of money. So –
I can imagine. It's, you know, I was there. I was there when they were selling my jersey, and I made $0 from it, eating off the Wendy's menu, you know. But it's come a long way since then. I would have been okay with the whole, you know, just give me a couple of thousand a semester would have been enough for a college student. That's all I wanted. I didn't want millions. I would have been happy with a couple of K a semester. I can go out to dinner. I can take a girl out. Couldn't even get that. I was getting $700 for supposed to cover my rent and fuel a month, which is ridiculous.
You know what they should have done back then, Bogues? They should have done, look, if they sell your jersey, you know, I don't care if you sold everybody's jersey. You get a cut of that. It's your jersey, your deal.
Oh, it wasn't my jersey, though, bro. It wasn't my jersey. It was just my number without my name on it. That's what they told me. So it wasn't technically my jersey.
Exactly. So my thing is, like, I'm not really into this NIL where it is now, where it's out of control. Kids are leaving all these school things and things like that. But I think if they gave the kids, like I read Fab Five, it was about Chris Webber and those guys at Michigan where they were starving, which they weren't starving. They were all getting money off runners and agents and boosters. But let's just say they were starving and they were going across campus and seeing their, you know, their jerseys sold in the bookstore for like $40 and they couldn't even eat. I think that was bullshit. But anyways, like, I think that anything that was sold, even if it didn't have your name on it, but it was your likeness deal, they should have gave you a cut of that individually. They should have allowed you guys to do, you know, any stuff, some stuff in the summer, run a camp, do appearances, stuff like that. I think that, you know, and of course it's going to get evil and cheat with that too, but definitely with that. But it's out of control, folks. I saw so many agents that represent players that are playing and like talking about what school and how much they're going to get paid and this and this.
Transfer
and they don't
portal,
get this.
Blah, blah, blah.
Folks, yeah. It's unbelievable. The NCAA, all they need to do to clean this thing up is just get rid of the transfer where you're automatically eligible unless your coach gets fired or leaves, or there's a death in your family, immediate family, and you want to move to a bordering state or wherever you're born, or even get rid of that where it's just you can't, you know, you can only.
What
leave
about
if your
committing
coach
to something and sticking with it? You know what I mean? Like, it's like,
I agree.
Look, we all have issues at times, but it's like, I think, you know, it was much rarer when I was in school. And it was a pain in the ass to do. You have to sit out a year and then you might get over recruited anyway. That school's basically got you for a year to see, shit, maybe we made a mistake. It seems like now it's like, oh, coach chewed me out. It didn't play me last game. Oh, I'm going to transfer portal. It's like, what?
Folks, you know what they should do? They should have a transfer fee for anybody who wants to transfer. 25 grand, 50 grand, whatever it is. Like, hey, look, you want to be treated like a pro? You want to get paid like a pro? All right, we're going to, like, you want to leave? Leave, but it costs you this. Do something, but you can't be immediately eligible. I mean, a lot of these guys go into school knowing they're going to transfer to the next school. And I'm not talking about the great players. Great players are great players. I'm talking about the average player, the below average player. You know, there's the first day of the transfer portal. There was something like last year, I think there was like 1,700 players in the portal itself. I think within 2 days, it was over 1,000 this year of the portal. It's just, it's insanity. And, you know, it's sort of like European basketball where a lot of these guys, they flip their rosters, like, you know, they flip their rosters.
Yeah, the NBL is the same. I mean, we have 1-2 year contracts and we get our players poached. If they do well, they get poached. If they do bad, we're going to cut them. You know, we don't see the results either way, right? So, the college stuff, man, it's just a whole. I remember getting a living in Salt Lake City, Utah. You know, winter's coming, snow. I remember getting I'm not going to say it doesn't matter at this point. I guess there's a statute to the limitations where they can ping the school, but Rick Majerus, well, he's passed away anyway, may rest in peace, so they can't really get him. But he bought the freshmen just some coats, you know, just bought us all a coat each, and got the interns to give it to us to say he's. They were like, "Do not tell anyone we bought you this coat. This is illegal. We're getting like a coat. A kid from Australia, like had never seen snow before. Great gesture, buy a coat. Like if the coat is swinging my decision to sign to Utah, like there's some fucking problems in the world, right? You know, that's what they hide behind back then. But now you're getting fucking Corvettes and Mercedes Benz and Bentleys, and it's like I was shitting myself about a coat, man. Like it was crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It's really hard. Yeah, it's interesting, but it's really hard. These kids are gonna have a really hard time in the real world when all this stuff's over. Like the pro players are gonna be pro players, but the average player that's getting $150,000 a year at a Power 5 school that's not a pro, and it's not gonna be able to play pro at any level once they're done with school, and they think that this is it, you know, like and it teaches them they could transfer 4 or 5 times, and you know, there's always gonna be a parachute to fall under. But it is interesting with this
whole
rules.
Good luck keeping a job in the real world and establishing yourself in a job. You're just going to go, you're going to be one of those people that's had, you go to their LinkedIn, it's like 9 jobs in the last, you know, 2 months.
There was a girl who was one of the best players in the Big Ten. She plays at Indiana. I forgot the girl's name. She's from Maine. She just did a post. It was pretty cool. Like she did a post con. They just lost to South Carolina yesterday in the tournament. And she was like, look, for anybody who's out there, I was at Indiana for 5 years. I love this school. You know, I know the cool thing is the portal and this and that, but I never thought about it. I always wanted to fight my way through. And it's great, like people who fight their way through. Look, like I said, if your coach leaves and they're the reason why you were going, and a lot of times it is, then that's fine. But, you know, it just a lot of it's fed bullshit too about like slavery and, you know, like these guys are taking advantage of you. In most cases, it's not the case. You know, look, they give you 4-year scholarship. You have a chance to not only like prove yourself, get to the pro level as a basketball player, but also you meet so many people at that school that can help you out going forward, and all the relationships you make. And it just teaches you a lot about life and being at school. And look, these schools are $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 a year to go to these days. I mean, I'm not saying that like players aren't a little bit getting taken advantage of, but like, you know, it's not really that bad. You get an education, you get to play, you know, in great arenas and great towns, meet a lot of people, have a chance to do great things, you know, and they were fed this bullshit about, oh, they're taking advantage of you, they're making billions of dollars. You and I spoke about the fact that the NCAA sort of puts a lot of money back. Now, look, they're tax exempt and that's bullshit. They definitely should pay taxes. But I'm just saying, like, you know, that they put a lot of their money back into non-revenue sports, about scholarships, about, you know, Division II and Division III and tournaments and things, you know.
Yeah, and sports that don't, like, yeah, sports that don't have pro leagues, you know, so there's a lot of sports that are.
And most of these schools don't make money at the end of the day because they got to pay for all these other sports. And it's just, it's interesting how all this stuff works. But yeah, so that was my, I might go tomorrow, I'm not sure, but it was a pretty cool experience. I thought it was going to be a lot more painful than it was. It wasn't bad.
I'm surprised Carlisle didn't have your photo at the front of the arena there, so you
were. Well, I was thinking about that Knicks thing about the facial recognition when I got in. I thought some alarm was going to come off. It was the first time I got in, and it was an interesting experience. Yeah, I was safe for now. I don't know if they put a tracer on my car or what are they going to do, but
Rick's
I watched
in
too many Jason
in Indiana, Bournemouth. You'll be all right. All right, let's move on to stats. I'm going to go with run most of them off, and I'm going to give you 3. I'm going to let you make the pick this week, bro. Dante Exum, 6.6 points, 1.5 rebounds, 2.1 assists. So recovering well from his injury in the rotation, doing well. Dyson Daniels, G League return, pro. Quick bounce back.
Oh, nice.
Month and a half surgery after a reported meniscus tear. Very strange. Mm-hmm. That is strange. That is the super ionic shit, because he's come back super fast. And it's great for the great for the Olympic team, Australian Olympic team, Boomers. Hopefully he's healthy and doing well, but had a really good game in the G League. He will be back in the New Orleans rotation. And by the way, real quick, we're talking about it off air with Trent. Like, New Orleans just quietly going about their business. We'll get into Zion a little bit.
Yeah.
They're playing really well. I think they're 5th in the West right now, and just quietly been going about it. So credit to them. They have a chance to be half decent in this playoffs, considering all the talk about the teams above and below. They're having a really good year.
Yeah, but, you know, our boy screwed me for my fantasy team, and I was out of the playoffs because of him. Actually, I was in. I lost in the first round, but friggin' Brandon Ingram, man, going down really hurt me.
Yeah, that hurt. And they're still playing well without him, surprisingly, but he's they need him back. Josh Green out, injured with a high ankle sprain. Still, Joe Ingles, 3.5 points, 2.6 rebounds, 3 assists per game, 5 for 12 from 3. Not his best couple of weeks. Had a good game today against Memphis in a 50-point-odd win, but hasn't been playing that great. Patty Mills starting for the Miami Heat now. Very interesting. Only been there a couple of weeks, and they've put him in the starting lineup. 6.5 points, 0.9 rebounds, 1.8 assists, and 1 steal per game. Tyus Thybulle out injured with an ankle, came back for one or half a game, re-injured the ankle, so he's still out. Ben Simmons out, obviously, for the season with the back injury. All right, here's the top three stats, bro. I'm not going to name who they are because you're going to give the award this week. Player one, 12 points, 3.5 rebounds, 1.4 assists. That's player one. Player two, 18.8 points, 5.6 rebounds, 6 assists per game. Player three, 9.8 points, 6.1 rebounds, 1.8 assists, and 1.8 blocks.
Oh, the 9.8 guy for sure. It's not even close. Who is it?
It's Jock Landau.
No, it's not. It's Shaquille Landale is our weekly Aussie of the week.
All right.
You should have had Trent do it. You should have had Trent because you knew I was gonna pick him. So
I thought you would have got confused with him. So that Jock Landale, 9.8 points, 6.1 rebounds, 1.8 blocks, 1.8 assists, playing really good basketball. They've won 11 straight, huge part of that. The other one was Dwight Reith, 12 points, 3.5 rebounds, 1.4 assists. But Josh Giddey's had probably his best week out of the last probably 2 or 3 months, and you haven't gone with him. So Daddy comes on a podcast again, but he's 18.8, 5.6, and 6 assists, 12 for 25 from 3. Also noted some comments. I don't know if you saw these. He was noted as being asked about whether he was becoming increasingly frustrated with the fact that teams are starting their 5-man on him at times and daring him to shoot the 3. And he had interesting quote. He said something along the lines of, I was becoming somewhat frustrated with it and thinking about it too much, and then I realized I just got to knock him down. And he has the last, 12 or 25 of the last 2 weeks. It's going to happen. It's going to happen in the playoffs. They're going to dare him. They're going to do the, kind of what I did to Tony Allen back in the day. They're going to dare him to knock those down, and he's knocking them down. But his game completely changes. If he can knock one or two threes in at a good clip early in games, his game completely changes. But I thought he was a bit stiff, pro, so hopefully you cop some shit this week for not giving it to Giddey like I copped it for not giving it to Landau last week.
Well, Bogues, it is what it is, my man. And, my guy helped that team win 11 straight, and they were a sinking ship when he was out of the lineup, and now he goes in the lineup. But I'm a big winning player type. And
okay, so he's tied first right now, bro. Just so you know.
Yeah, they got a couple of, they also have an MVP candidate other
But just
players.
Let you know. We're about winning.
I'll tell you what with Giddey, though, with the shooting part. Look, they've got the best shooting coach in the NBA with, Chip England working with him. He's going to get better, but you got to continue to have him out there, especially in this stretch run in the next 3 or 4 weeks. His shooting is getting better, 34% from the three. Like you said, 12 out of his last 25. It looks a little bit better. The free throw shooting's at over 80. He just got to keep on going out there and shooting it. And forget about what teams are doing against you. It's a fucking mind game. And if you're not strong enough mentally to, focus that shit out, then you shouldn't fucking be there anyway. Who gives a fuck? If you start making them, they're going to start changing it anyway. No one cares about what you did 2 weeks ago. They care about what you're doing now. So you got to just continue to just get back in the saddle, fucking shoot that shot when it's open. And one thing about Oklahoma City and Giddey too, they don't shoot 1,000 threes. They shoot a small amount of threes. They lead the league in 3-point shooting because they take really good threes and they're disciplined. They hold the line. And he's got to just continue to shoot. He's going to get better. And imagine that lineup with able to play him because he could make some shots here and there and not afraid to shoot. And now you got to guard all those guys. They're going to be tough. And now are they going to be experienced enough to win the playoffs? Who knows? But I think he's going to get better. He still has about, 14 games or so left in the year to just continue to shoot. And if I'm that coach, I'd be drawing up ATOs all the time with him getting threes just to keep getting him reps and just to get him through it and, just to continue to support him. But I think it'll be interesting. But I don't give a fuck what he did because he ain't winning Aussie of the Week on my watch.
All right. So Shaquille Landale, first ever. Yep. So. All right, we'll move on to some stats, useful or useless. Zion Williamson. He has lost 25 pounds since the NBA in-season tournament. The Pelicans are 35-19 since that tournament. And he's averaging 22.4 points, 5.8 rebounds, and 5.1 assists. Useful or useless?
useful. Look, he needs to continue not only to be in shape this season, but, you know, going forward, off season and going forward with his, you know, nutrition and staying in shape. If he's in shape, not only is he a better player, but he stays on the floor. He's not, you know, the injury stuff doesn't stack up against him and he gets to just focus on basketball. And I think it's totally useful that he put up those numbers and they're winning games and he has that much impact. He had very little impact on their winning when he, you know, when he was that heavy. And I think that, you know, he put up points, no question about it, but I think him being in shape is a big, big plus for them.
Yeah, you look at them and you look at Dallas. Both their star players are in shape and playing well. Coincidentally, their teams are in the mix. So it's a pretty simple formula and you know, good on Zion for getting back in shape and playing himself into shape and their team looks good. Ingram obviously hurt, but they're playing really good basketball. All right, Wemby. Wembanyama's already had more career blocks, 207 plus, than 81.4% of all active players in the NBA as of the 19th of March. With 13 games left, Wemby has more blocks and steals, 290 combined, than the last nine defensive players of the year, 213 blocks and 77 steals. Useful, useless.
Useful. This guy's going to be the best shot blocker in the history of the game if he stays healthy. I've never seen, and I've seen a lot of great shot blocking. I didn't see Russell, obviously. I'm too young for that. But I've seen a lot of the big time shot blockers in our game going for, you know, in the past 35 years or so. And I've never seen anything like it. You know, he could block from the weak side. He could block you right from the post. He could chase you down. He could guard you and pick a roll. He could block shots in the perimeter. I've never seen, now I don't know about the other parts of his game. Obviously, there's a lot of special things that he does, but shot blocking and steals. He has an innate ability to just erase whatever you're trying to do. So I say it's very, very useful.
Yeah, very useful. Amazing defensively. And just his awareness and feel for the game, albeit, like I said many times, he can make massive mistakes defensively and be able to recover like most players can't. You know, he can lunge for a steal and then recover and meet with the rim and block his shot. Just amazing to watch. Amazing, you know, just superhuman, you know, spider-like player, you know, and it's been enjoyable, but those numbers, you know, last nine defensive player of the year haven't had those numbers. Pretty crazy. I think he's going to be unlucky just because their team sucks from getting that award, but he's definitely in the running. All right, Anthony Davis. I know we've gotten on him before. A lot of people have gotten on him about injuries, but he's played 96 out of the last 100 games for the Lakers, and he's fifth in the NBA in minutes played. Useful, useless.
Well, useful for sure. Well, I mean, it's short term. He hasn't really done that in a long time, but I think it's useful to the fact that what he brings to that team. And he has stepped up in many games where he had, when LeBron either didn't have it or they just needed another guy to step up. And I think that's useful. Now, can he do it, you know, in the next 3 or 4 years? I don't know. But he hasn't really been able to do that.
Older. But it's just good to see him healthy, and he's a big part of what they do. So I think it's useful there. Sabonis becomes the 10th player in NBA history to record a double-double streak of 50 consecutive games. He's now at 54. He's fourth all-time in NBA, ABA history. Post-merger, he's first all-time with the longest streak. Your longest streak, Pro, is 227. Wilt Chamberlain, that's over consecutive seasons. And the other players ahead of him were all part of the ABA, and Elvin Hayes, Elgin Baylor, and Walt Bellamy. But Sabonis is number one post-merger. I doubt he's getting Wilt's number. He might get a few of the other guys, but unbelievable run there. I think Kevin Love was the last one to have a big run like this.
Those are great numbers. I mean, it's useful for what he's done and, you know, what he brings to the game as far as every night just being a guy who could rebound, scored, you know, his game's just gotten better and better. I remember watching him, working with him at the Nike camp in LA, going into his freshman year at Gonzaga and just seeing this short-armed, really strong, you know, really tough kid and not knowing how good he was going to be as far as an NBA player. You know, he goes to OKC and then, you know, he still just didn't know how good he was going to be. And, you know, and then, you know, Indiana and now Sacramento, it's great to see what he's doing. He's really impacts winning and can put up numbers. So I say definitely useful for what he's doing.
Very useful. And he's 6'9", right? 6'8", 6'9"
Yeah, about 6'9", yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just for people out there and, you know, oh, you have to be big to rebound, he's undersized in every matchup he goes in the NBL, NBA night in, night out, and just absolute animal on the board, you know?
Yeah, short-armed too. Like, yeah. He's not long-armed, you know, not overly athletic. He's just tough. And, you know, his dad was different. He's about 6'10". His dad was just a different, like, he came over to play an AU team that I was affiliated with. It was before my time, like in the late 70s. And they said what he could do before he got hurt, his dad was, he could have been one of the best players in NBA history. And he's a different type of player, but he could pass, he could rebound, he's tough, he's, you know, gritty. And, man, it's great to see, you know, because that trade, you thought, you didn't know what to expect from that trade. You know, everyone was all over Halliburton, you know, doing so well for Indiana. And now it's great to see what he's doing to help Sacramento win and, you know, have impact. And, you know, the guy's shooting 60 from the field, 40 from the three, only 70 from the line. But, you know, what he brings every night, 13.6 rebounds a night and 8.3 assists. Yeah, he's fun to watch.
And they need him. He's probably their best playmaker. I mean, Fox is not a assist type playmaker.
More of a scorer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you need a big like that. He fits in well with that roster. All right, last one. This isn't a useless, but we're gonna go NBA ejections all time, pro. Who do you think top five all time are in NBA ejections?
Oh wow. Ejections.
Yeah. Well, we'll bring this
folks,
up.
I wouldn't even know where to begin.
The first one should be
Draymond.
Pretty, he's in the five. He's not first.
Let me see. Lambert?
Nope. All right, you're way off. All right, Rasheed Wallace. He's the all time leader. Yep. He's got 29. Yep. Draymond Green second all time with 21.
Yeah.
Dwight Howard 17. And then 16 is Charles Barkley and Anthony Mason tied. I thought Rodman would have been in there too, but he's not.
I thought Rodman or Lambert would be. Well, what do you think about the ejection with Green the other night?
I mean, he was going pretty hard. Like this is the thing, when Draymond gets his first one, he's going to dare you to give him the second one, and the ref took the dare. You know, like there was a lot of blatant. I think called him a pussy ass, N or bitch or something like that.
So just a hard foul, or you think that was dirty? What he got ejected for?
On Patty? Was it that one? Was it
Patty? Was it Patty or was it Orlando?
Well, it might have been
Patty.
Well, there's a lot of games.
I thought it was Orlando.
There's a big scrapbook of games we're talking about with Draymond Fowler.
Yeah, it just happened.
But
it happened about a week ago.
Yeah, so
where he like grabbed
he got a common foul on Patty,
which is crazy.
Which is crazy. But that one was against Orlando Pro. But it was like 4 minutes into the game. And it got quite a bit of news because Steph was seen.
I saw that
pretty
almost crying
after it.
I didn't see the foul. I just saw the ejection. And that was the second ticket was for going at the ref. I mean, that's, you know, do you do it as a ref? The ref was trying to walk away, kept going. By the book, it's a ejection. I'll give you a fact or fact or fake news on it later, bro. We'll go on for you this week. But yeah, the was just an interesting one to see who the all time leaders were. She'd still got an eight game lead on Draymond, but Draymond's still active, so you never know. Yeah. NBL, wrap this up real quick. So we wrapped up game one last week. It was 1-0 for United. Game two in Tasmania. United were up 15 in this game in Tasmania. And Tasmania fight back and get the win. I think that was, you know, potentially where United would have lost the series. If they do lose this series, it was because of that game. But they clawed back and got the win. Game three, we go to Melbourne. Amazing game. One of the best NBL finals games I've seen in recent memory. Just back and forth. Dele made some huge plays and then made a bad play. It ends up being Melbourne ball, their ball. 10 seconds left. So Tasmania have to foul, and a flop ends up costing them the game, in my opinion. Dele throws a turnover, but if you watch a replay, CG43, known to fall over with a bit of wind, he ends up near the sideline, grabs McDonald's arm, falls over the sideline trying to get a foul before the ball's inbounded. As that happens, Dele throws him the ball. He falls over, goes straight to Milton Doyle, gets thrown to the baseline of United. Milton Doyle, for some reason, saves the ball because they have no timeouts left. He saves it. Could have been out of bounds, borderline. Doesn't go out of bounds. They save it. Jack McVay, did you see the shot, pro? He dribbles up and hits you got to see it. It should be on my account, but look up game three NBL. He dribbles up, with 7-6-5-4-3. Jacks it with 4 seconds left, one step over the half court line with 4 seconds left. He could have went, got to the basket and knocks it down. And United has no timeouts. They have no timeouts. They shoot a full court heave. They miss. 2-1, Tassie. We go to Tasmania now, and Melbourne just grinded out a win. Tasmania have full control of the game. They have the ball with up three with about, I think, 30 or 40 seconds left. Milton Dawe brings it over half court, turns it over, live ball turnover for a layup. They go and lay it up. Tassie up one. Melbourne United come down, get a stop. They call a timeout, and Dally, they let him get to his right hand for a layup, basically. I couldn't believe it. You know, Dally's going to go right 101% of the time, and when he doesn't, he's going to cross back over and get to his right. And he got to his right hand, made a layup on the buzzer and Tasmania had the last possession. They advance it. They turn it over. Joe Lewala-Chool makes a huge defensive play late in that game. He's been horrible for him defensively for the most of this series. It was really, really big play to seal the game. Game five, series decider in Melbourne. A great start for United. I feel like they were in a similar position to what Tassie were in game four, where I felt like Melbourne dominated that first quarter and Tassie just made a little run late in that first to get it down to five. I think that was very flattering for Tassie. They didn't play great basketball in that first quarter, and Melbourne managed to not put their foot on Tasmania's throat, which was the flip side of what Tasmania did in game four. They were the dominant team in the first quarter and only had a small lead. Very similar circumstances, just flipped. Second quarter goes absolutely dry. Melbourne scored 31 points in the first. They only scored 13 in the second. It gets really clunky for them. Tasmania throughout the game were getting stops. They just couldn't capitalize offensively. And United, the game goes tied at halftime. Melbourne full control of the third quarter and even most of the fourth, and then Tasmania make a run late and just snatch victory from Melbourne United. I feel like Melbourne let this game go. It felt like Dally was really the only guy late in that game that was willing to, you know, make a play. I mean, he made a few mistakes, shot an air ball, but he was aggressive towards the basket. It seemed like everyone else was just waiting for something to happen. You look at Melbourne scorers, you know, Lewala-Chool was their best scorer with 14 points in 21 minutes, 6-for-11 from the field. He was their leading scorer for the game. You know, Dally had 13 and 7 assists. Travers had 13 and 7. CG43, you know, 13 points and not much else. I think if Melbourne got over the line, a lot of people had Chris Golding as the MVP. I didn't. I had Dellavedova as the MVP, if not Travers. I think Chris's scoring came in bunches, but there was not much else that he really did, in my opinion, in that series other than small scoring flurries. I thought Travers was really good, especially on the defensive end, getting them going early, and Dellavedova was the same. Ian Clark, 11 points off the bench. We'll probably need a little bit more from him. He dried up a little bit in that second half and couldn't get anything early. United's bench, just not enough production. And you look at, you know, Shea Ealy, Chris Golding, you know, and Dellavedova, they were fatigued by the third quarter. They were not running at that same speed. Everything was a grind. I mean, both teams were somewhat fatigued, but those three guys in particular, me, just looked absolutely spent. And that showed. But, you know, Tasmania, credit to them. I mean Crawford, kind of a up and down series and up and down finish to the season in and out of lineups. Only played roughly 20 minutes a night up until this game. He just comes out and he looked like he was throwing, you know, rocks into an ocean. I mean, he could not miss, and he was, when their offense was super dry, they couldn't get anything easy. He just continued to find them easy baskets. An absolutely unbelievable historical game five performance. 11 for 22 for his 32 points. But the first half was where he got it done, where they were struggling to score at times, and he just kept them close enough. I mean, Magne on one leg, you know, at times you were like, why is he still in the game? Well, comes up with a huge block shot late in the game, comes up with a huge dunk late in the game, didn't play his best, but limped them towards victory. Milton Doyle, I was looking and just wondering when Roth was going to stop going to him. You know, he had a horrible series for the most part, in my opinion, but he closed this game very, very well. He kept attacking and putting his nose on the rim. He finished with 11 points and 10 rebounds. Not a great clip, 5 for 15, 3 turnovers. It just looked like it wasn't his night, and he makes a couple of great plays. So Deng off the bench for them was pretty good. And an adjustment by Roth in this game was electing to put Drimmick on the bench, starting McDonald, and one of the series, in my opinion. McDonald played 35 minutes. Drimmick played 9. He struggled in game 4. They flipped that. And just an unbelievable performance. I mean, the Jack Jumpers really only played 8 guys throughout this game. And United, you know, they went 4 deep. They went with Krebs and Bowen for 3 and 4 minutes respectively. But Huck, Porty and Clark were the only 2 others. So a lot of fatigue in this series. I feel like Tasmania won it, but Melbourne also let the rope slip. They had control of that series. I mean, they were up by, I think it was 8 points going into a timeout, and they, you know, Tasmania come out and go on a 10-1 run and tie the game up. So absolutely huge congratulations to the Tasmania Jumpers. I mean, to be your 3rd year in the league and win a championship. You've been in the finals twice in that 3 years, one loss against Sydney Kings, 1 win against Melbourne United. Absolutely tremendous for Scott Roth and that fan base down there. You should be very proud of your team. I know, you know, the Sydney Kings and myself had a bit of banter with the Jack Jumpers a few years ago, and it's all in love. You deserve this, and I think the whole of Australia was cheering for you guys. You know, it was Australia versus Melbourne. It's nothing better to see a bunch of Melbourne fans in their RM boots having a wake up tomorrow for their mocha chai latte with a sad look on their face. So congratulations to the Jack Jumpers. Melbourne will bounce back. Congratulations to them as well, in all seriousness. They had a great season, first from start to not finish, but finished. All right, some free agency stuff with the NBL. There's a lot going on, Pro. We might have our wildest free agency in recent memory. There's a lot going on. There's players. Yeah, there's players being mutually released from contracts to go sign somewhere else. Nathan Sobey, the latest biggest name departing the Brisbane Bullets, rumoured to be signing with the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. From what I hear, Sobey wanted an extension with the Brisbane Bullets. He had 1 year left on the deal. He said, can I get an extension? I think he just bought a house recently in the last year in Brisbane, wanted an extension. They said, look, we don't want to extend you right now. We want to see how it goes. And he said, okay, let me out of my deal. I'm going elsewhere then. You don't want me here long term. Adios. They've released him, apparently going to Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. Last week, we didn't really touch on it, but Xavier Cook's back to the Sydney Kings. Huge signing for us. Championship winner, league MVP. Does a lot of the little things for us that we need. We're excited to get him back after his stint in Japan there. It costs us a little bit of money, but you got to pay to get the best. Have heard Aaron Baines is retiring. I'm not 100% sure on that. But there's some rumblings I've heard from my circles that he will be hanging up the shoes and giving it up. I know he's got a young family that he's focused on right now and probably wants to move on from the basketball thing. Not the best season for him last year. And I hate to see guys going out like he's gone out, you know, had the issues, had the ejections, fiery guy. I just hope he doesn't leave the game with a bad taste in his mouth, and you just never want to see that, because there's a lot of things that can happen later on in your life with that kind of stuff. So I hope he's in a good space there. But yeah, I think this NBL free agency is going to be nuts. It's just one of those things. There's a lot of movement. A lot of teams are getting off guys that they paid a lot of money for. There's a lot of buyouts going on. There's a lot of places, a lot of players, almost trade-like moves. Also hearing Mitch Creek could potentially be on the move from Southeast Melbourne. I think he has a year left on his deal, but I've heard he's looking at 2 teams elsewhere. Brisbane or possibly Tasmania has come up as well. So I'm interested to see how that all goes, if there's any truth to those rumours. But there's a lot going on, and it is interesting. The Kings roster, can't give too much more info, but really happy with where we're at and where, you know, some kids overseas that we're looking at, and some other players that we hopefully will announce in the next couple of weeks. Obviously, free agency doesn't start till 2 weeks after the grand final series, which is now. So we'll see how that all goes. But I'm excited about the Kings, Pro. That's the NBL wrap. But you need to go watch that buzzer beater, man. Come on, for the people of the Rogue Bugs pod, they need you to see that shot. But an unbelievable shot.
That's amazing.
Sounds amazing. Further than that Steph shot against OKC. And
that's crazy.
But the fact that he shot it, if he would have missed that, he would have looked like the biggest dickhead in the world, because it was 4 seconds left. They were in the bonus. They could have got fouled. He had the whole right side of the court. He could have attacked. Melbourne United were pretty well loaded up on the left side, but he could have definitely got to the basket. He's pulled up and shot it so pure and walked it off. And actually had a chance in game four, the similar shot, but flat and almost banked it in to win the game. So that was interesting as well. But fact or fake news, Pro, I'm going to give you mine first. Okay,
go ahead. What do you got?
Fact or fake news, Draymond Green will be the all-time leader in ejections by the time he retires. He's on 21. He's on 21. She's on 29. So he needs 9 to win, 8 to tie.
Fact.
Fact. Why?
He doesn't have a lot of restraint with that where he could just turn it off. I remember working for Kobe, you know, in the playoffs, you know how you could only have a certain amount of technicals and you start missing games. Mm. And I remember one year, I think it was 2010, he was really bad with it. And we had to talk about it. And he was like, I'm shutting that shit off. It ain't going to happen again. And it didn't. And I forgot where we were in the playoffs, but it just didn't. And was a fiery guy. And there were certain guys that can shut it off when they know it's going to be detrimental to the team. I think Draymond, when he gets to a certain point, you know him better than I do. I only watch him. But it just seems like he's the type of guy that, like, when he gets on one, that's it. And he goes nuts. And it depends on who's reffing him that night and how much abuse they're going to take from him before they, you know, put a tech or an ejection in. I just don't think he has the restraint to do it. Now, does he have enough years playing to do it? He's got 8 more and what? He'll be playing for, what, 3 more years or so? 4 more years, give or take? Maybe that's a lot, but I don't think so. If he plays for 4 more years, it's 2 more ejections a year. I just don't know how long he's going to play for. But I say fact. I just think that he's not really going to ever really learn from any of this stuff, like the ejections, the suspensions. I just think that he's a competitor. He goes hard. He goes balls to the wall. And if he feels as though he needs to make a point on something or make a hard foul or a cheap shot, he's going to do it. That if he thinks it's going to benefit the team or he's just feeling like that one day or one night, I just think he just doesn't have the restraint for it. What do you think, Bogues?
Yeah, look, I think fact, just based on as we all get older, we get more grumpy, our body hurts more. You got these young whippersnappers coming up, but you're nipping at your ankles and they're no longer going to be that top dog for much longer, or they're not right now, right? I think there's some frustrations in that, and he's going to have these young guys, you know, gone at him the same way he went at all the older guys when he came in the league. And that can become, whether they're ejections for double technicals of just argy-bargy, whether they're mad at the officials, whether they're flagrant fouls. I think he has a chance to catch sheet. So I'm going to say fact. He needs, what, 3 more a year for the next 3 years, and he's there. That's not a lot in 82 games plus playoffs, you know. So I hope not, but he's an emotional guy, and that's part of who he is and why he's great is – you know that you're going to get balls to the wall, Draymond Green, every night, but once every couple of weeks and once a month, you got to get him back and put him on the tracks. That's what makes him so good and so great. You don't want it the other way around where you need to motivate a guy and constantly go, come on, man, give me some more energy. He's got all that 24/7, and sometimes it hurts him and his team, as we saw with Steph's reaction.
You know, it's funny. Like, Rodman was different than him. Rodman was flamboyant, but not where he's cheap shotting or hard fouling to that extent or going after refs. He had some moments, but like, you got to let those types of guys go and do their thing. I remember I'm watching the Last Dance for the 19th time, and you know, the part when Rodman had to take the vacation during the season to Vegas, right? Like, Phil Jackson, the way he dealt with him, and it's funny with Kerr and Jackson being a lot of the same type of guy, like, they just let him be Dennis. And look, you know, that's a lot different than Draymond, some of the things that he does with the cheap shot and getting, you know, potentially getting some guys hurt and doing some things like that. But like you said, it's what you need, those types of guys. There's the skill, graceful players that you all need. You need the talent. But then there's always that guy on almost every team that's the cheap shot guy, that's the hard foul guy, that's the, you know, get in your face, want to fight anybody guy, and going to get himself thrown out guy. And you need that to be a championship level team. And that's proven, and because he was a big part of their success in every one of their championship teams. And I think that you just can't turn that off, because once you ask him to – quote unquote medicate himself and just sort of dumb it down, then I don't want him on my team. Because offensively, I don't want him on my team. Yeah, he passes, he rebounds, and screens and all that. But like, he doesn't give you a lot offensively. He doesn't really shoot. He doesn't really score it like that. But what he does, what's special at a high level, is his ability to be tough, rebound, pass, screen, and just be an intimidator. And you need those types of guys. And almost everybody on that list was that type of guy. 100%. An intimidator. You know, so you need that. But, you know.
Yeah, he gets shit for it. And look, at times he does it, overdoes it. And last game was an example of that. I mean, Steph knows how important these games are right now to try to make a push to the play-in and beyond. And but, yeah, it's a tough one. You got to take the good with the bad. He's one of those players. You got to take the good with the bad. And Steve knows that. Mm-hmm. You know, if they saw it as that big of an issue, he wouldn't be there right now. He wouldn't be there today. They would have tried to move off him years ago. But they know the value he brings, especially when it's a big game, need a big stop. Big playoff series, he's generally done more good than bad, bar the one championship year where the suspension did cost things a little bit and reshuffle things. But for the most part, you know, there's been a lot more net positive with him than net negative. It's just that, you know, we love to talk about these kind of things as we are, and that's just the way it goes. What do you got? What's your fact or fake news?
So, Bovs, Jalen Brunson, 61 last night.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, amazing what he's doing on the floor. You know, being a leader, being the number one option on, you know, in Madison Square Garden every night, you know, being with the Knicks and just being a number one option. My question, well, the fact of fake news is we'll compare him to another quote unquote superstar. Jalen Brunson is a better player. You would rather Jalen Brunson on your team today, not barring injury, just sort of talent for talent, than Ja Morant, fact or fake news?
Oh, wow, that's a good one. Is that including the off-court shit?
Well, everything. Like, so just say Ja Morant's healthy. So he doesn't have the injury stuff. The off-the-court shit is still there. He's still the same type of guy. But right now, you have a max-level spot. They're both free agents. They both come to you and say, Bogues, we want to play for your team. You could sign one of us. You're signing Jalen Brunson over Ja Morant, and I want to know the why.
Oh my god, that's a really hard one. It's a really roster fit would be important in this one, so you'd have to kind of know what pieces you have around. Morant is a price of admission guy more than Jalen Brunson, in my opinion, as far as oohs and ahs and wow. So if you're probably a rebuilding team that needs some bums on seats, you go Ja Morant. But Brunson, what, you know, we're all about what have you done for me lately? And based on that, I'd take Jalen Brunson as of today, just because there's no off court issues. He seems real level headed. He seems like he's got a good aura about him off the floor, not in trouble, does the right things, can just get it hot like we saw the other night. And he's, you know, turn New York around. You look at Memphis, a big reason why they're where they're at is Ja Morant. Okay, yeah, you had the issues, and then but then it led into a bad injury, karma, all this kind of stuff. I think that Brunson seems to do things the right way. You haven't heard a lot of people talk bad about him, even in Dallas. And I think what have you done for me lately is that the only thing I'd have Ja Morant above him on is woe factor. I think he's probably a bigger for the average NBA fan. You know, you'd say 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10 would pick seeing Ja Morant play over Brunson, right? You know, just because he's going to do something exciting, he's going to dunk on someone, he's very flashy. Whereas if you're a GM and you just want solid, you're going with Brunson.
Yeah, I say fact. I say Jalen Brunson. And here's why I say Jalen Brunson. First of all, they're both great players. They're both great point guards. I've got them like one pick ahead of the other. Like in point guards in the league, I've got Brunson at 7. And I've got Ja Morant tied for 8th with De'Aaron Fox. And I think that Brunson has shown, look, yeah, the wow factor and the athleticism and the explosiveness goes to Ja Morant without even, you know, with no question. The shooting, the efficiency, the basketball IQ, my opinion goes to Brunson. The ability to guard people, keep people in front, Ja Morant without question. But what this kid across the board, if you follow Jalen Brunson through high school, through college, through the pros, I remember being in the draft room in Dallas and, you know, we had some decisions to make. That was the Luka draft. And then we had in the second round pick with Jalen Brunson, and a couple of people didn't want Brunson for no other reason but like the athleticism factor. We had a couple other point guards in the roster, but I remember Donnie Nelson and a couple other high ranking people all across the board. They just kept on saying over and over, this kid's a winner. And I think that Jalen Brunson impacts winning more than almost any player in the league as far as what he brings to it every day. And being with him for a year, I've never seen a player that was a more turnkey rookie that was ready to be a professional than that guy. And I don't know what it was. Obviously, his dad playing for a long time, family, being going to Villanova with a great coach, all that. But the kid just is a winner, and he's somebody who wants on your team, and he pulls for teammates, and you know, and he's got talent. I mean, 28 a game, being the number one player, not on like the Brooklyn Nets or, you know, a team like that, or Brooklyn or San Antonio or something like that. He's at 28-7 on a playoff team that has a chance to win a round in the playoffs at least. And
he's fourth in the league in scoring. I didn't realize he was that high up. He's fourth in the league in scoring.
Yeah, 28.
13th in assists, you know. And
48%. Yeah, 48, 84, 40. I mean, you know, and shooting was his thing that needed a little bit of work coming in the league. He ended up working with a shooting coach named Peter Patton that's with the Bulls now. Did a fantastic job with him. But that guy just works. He wins. I remember him coming in. We were on the road, you know, and we would leave the arena. We would leave the hotel at 3:30, 3:45, and he was ready to go. And like everything that he brings to the table, and just that's what you want. And like I said, it's really close. And I don't know Ja Morant like that, but I do know that that guy, you know, the trouble thing definitely sticks. And they are very close in talent, you know, as far as what they bring, different things. But Brunson, all day long, I want that guy on my team. Like you said, he's not a sexy guy to watch. He's not going to dunk, you know, five times a night. He's not going to make those unbelievable plays. But he's a guy that will just figure things out, able to score, create space, create separation, and he's a hell of a player.
And, yeah, and longevity but wise I think it's too. Close. You got to think longevity wise. His style of basketball, injury wise, will be better. You know, Ja Morant's style. Yeah. You worry about him so much, man. Like going in and dunking on 7-footers every night. Yes, yeah, great, but you're gonna get put down a lot, and he gets put down a lot, and it's the Derrick Rose kind of thing.
Like Derrick Rose.
Yeah, you look at Brunson, and it's kind of like below the rims, you know, more kind of using his body, smarts, IQ, all that kind of stuff, and it doesn't take as much of a toll on your body. So I think that's the other thing you got to factor in. If it's a long-term player for your franchise, you're like, I think you're going to get more out of Brunson, more games on court than you will Morant. That was a good one. It's a tough one because they're both very good players, but hopefully Morant can bounce back next season because I think Memphis is a very good team when healthy. But they just, you know, it just looks like crap right now. And a big part of it is Morant.
Who does Trent like?
Oh, I would have went with Morant. Like you touched on IQ. I actually think Morant IQ wise is like one of the best IQ guys for his age in the league. And I think a few other players have actually kind of testified to that with CP3 and Draymond have both said that the thing that impressed them the most by Ja was that. But I also come back to the longevity thing as well. Like you look at D Rose's career, MVP and all that, but it's like, for a franchise that didn't lead to winning, lead to ticket sales. So I think I've been swayed to the Brunson side because I definitely probably would have picked Ja, especially on the defensive end as well. I think he brings more.
I'm confused. So you started with Ja, now you're going all the way back to Brunson.
We swayed him.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Wow. If you asked me the question off the bat, I probably would have went with Ja. But the longevity and you're looking to win chips, your Brunson's your guy.
And just no IQ off the floor, Trent, just on floor, right?
Just on floor, just to be clear. Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
So I make that clear.
Yeah, I have a feeling that in a situation at an airport, I think that Brunson will be randomly stopped a few more times than Brunson, in my opinion.
Yeah, just random. All right. Good it, bro. All right, a lot through there, through that episode. Lots to get through. But yeah, NBL Finals obviously gone now. So off season of free agency and then the NBA going into money time. We'll see. And by next pod, we'll have a NCAA championship winner as well. And then obviously EuroLeague kicking off and as well overseas. So Pro will get back to his nightly EuroLeague that much to the awe of some of our listeners saying, no way you watch that shit over the NBA, but that's what Pro does. Go watch the buzzer beater, Pro.
Let's do it.
All right, man. We'll see you next week.
Later, fellas.